Young Dr. Malone, presented by the makers of Post Bran Flakes, will not be heard today. Now here's a roundup of the latest invasion news. Allied invasion forces on the Cherbourg Peninsula have cleared all enemy troops from the beachheads, and in some cases these beachheads have been linked together. British paratroop forces have taken bridges north of Caen, which lies 9 miles inland, and have beaten off a German tank counterattack. This is the first engagement of any size reported since the invasion began. It took place last evening, and is assumed to have been a fight for a railway which runs through Caen and links with Cherbourg, 65 miles away. Allied ground troops have been reinforced by men and supplies dropped from fleets of transport planes. But the Germans are also rushing up reinforcements, and enemy resistance is stiffening. The weather also has been unfavorable. As a result, Allied operations have been slowed down somewhat, and headquarters said reports coming in from the front this morning were disappointing. However, by midday, reports showed that our position was improving. The Germans say Allied artillery has already gone into action from the beachhead. The Germans are jittery about possible new Allied landings. This morning, they said Allied troops had tried to land on the Pas-de-Calais area of the French coast. Now they say we have landed an airborne division on the western coast of the Normandy Peninsula. That's across the peninsula from our present beachhead. And if the reported landing has been made, it may mean that the Allies are aiming to cut off the finger of land jutting into the channel. However, there has been no Allied confirmation of such a landing. The American 9th Air Force announced 33 hours after H hour that its troop carrier command has completed its first assignment. More than 900 airborne sorties were flown by the Americans alone, while others were flown by British planes. From June 1st to last night, all Allied air forces flew more than 71,000 sorties in support of the invasion. Since the invasion began, we have lost 70 planes. Observers in Britain estimate that Allied aerial superiority over the beaches is about 200 planes to one of the enemy's. It's also reported that the naval forces hitting western France employed more officers and men than were in the entire British Navy at the outbreak of the war. At that time, Royal Navy personnel totaled 133,000. And now here in CBS News headquarters in New York is John Daly with a story of some of the things our soldiers are facing and overcoming. John Daly.
The invasion of Hitler's European fortress is now 38 hours old. And because the invasion is now 38 hours old, reports are coming in from the beaches of France, which focus down to the fighting in specific areas, which begin to make clear what G.I. Joe and the British Tommy faced when they charged headlong into Hitler's impregnable Atlantic wall. It is a story of magnificent courage and sacrifice, another glorious chapter in the long history of the Queen of Battle, the infantry. One of the eyewitness reports of the fighting on the beaches comes from Pete Brandt, an Acme News photographer who spent half an hour on the beach in the early hours of the invasion yesterday and several more hours cruising just offshore. I have a particular interest in Brandt's report because I know him. I covered the battles in Sicily and Italy with him and saw him last at Anzio when we both accompanied the invasion of that beach just below Rome. He's a trained observer in this nasty business of war. And let's see what he has to say about the fighting on just one strip of our European beachhead. Brandt sums it up by saying that it was hotter than hell, that nothing at Anzio was like it. He tells of the calmness of our boys when they were crossing the channel and taking a picture of one soldier asleep on top of a jeep just 5 minutes before landing. When they got into the beach, everything was quiet until the landing craft lowered their ramps, and then the Germans poured a deadly machine gun fire right into the oakum jaws of the landing craft. Our soldiers charged out in the face of this crossfire. Some of them were immediately mowed down. The succeeding waves climbed over their bodies until a foothold was established and the German machine guns had been silenced. Right off the beach, Rangers scaled tall cliffs under heavy fire. In 15 minutes, knocked out enemy gun positions, which were firing down on the landing craft coming into the beach. Some boats, says Brandt, were burning, and a pall of smoke hung over the area. In the water, the bodies of some of our soldiers bobbed in the choppy surf. Men on the beach crouched behind jeeps, tanks, anything they could find for cover. And some were pinned down in shallow foxholes in the sand for hours, while little handfuls of men crept forward, trying again and again to wipe out the enemy gun emplacements. This is a familiar story to those of us who covered the campaigns in the Mediterranean. It's a familiar story of what invasion and battle are really like. It means being afraid and beating down that fear because there's a job to be done. It means lying in a shallow hole with all the earth heaving under you and then getting out of it to advance through fire from an enemy who can't be seen most of the time. It means dirt and hunger and sweat and blood. And yet a wounded boy can sit in the corner of a landing craft returning to England and say unhappily to Brandt, "For 3 years I've been training for this, and what happens? As soon as I get off the boat, I get hit. I didn't even get a chance to fire a shot at a German." The battle has only begun. This afternoon, dispatches from the front say that two German armies, personally commanded by Marshal Erwin Rommel, are racing toward our beachheads for a counterattack. If and when Rommel strikes, the die will be cast. In a small area, perhaps no more than 100 square miles, guns and planes and tank destroyers and mortars and bombs will rend the sky and the earth. And there will be men there, theirs and ours, and they will decide the battle, for all the great paraphernalia of war means nothing without them. Once again, G.I. Joe and Tommy will hold the fate of free men in their hands, and they will dig in deeper and pray harder and beat down their fear. And then they will get up and charge an enemy they can't see because there's a job to be done.
Here in our New York studios, Columbia's analyst, William L. Shira, is ready to discuss the pattern of German propaganda and tell us something of the land on which our troops are fighting. Mr. Shira.
The pattern of German propaganda is now pretty clear on the second day of the invasion. The gist of it is to confuse us by announcing landings that haven't yet taken place, to depress us by exaggerating our losses, to assure their own and satellite peoples that all is going well, and that the so-called New Europa is remaining calm and confident that the Germans were successfully defended against the Allied onslaught. Thus, the German High Command communique today first admits that we succeeded in gaining footholds in several places, and then, when it has built up our initial successes, claims that most of our bridgeheads were wiped out in German counterattacks. There are the usual Nazi propaganda stories about our huge losses, though one notes few, if any, details are ever given by the Nazis. One expected Nazi propaganda angle developed today. We knew from past experience that the Germans would tell the British that they were suffering the biggest losses while the Americans were getting off more easily. And, of course, that the Nazis would tell us the opposite. Sure enough, today, one Berlin broadcast solemnly announced that American losses are so far 3 times those of the British. We will hear a lot more stories like that in the next few days and weeks, and there won't be anything to them. And there will be more containing alleged interviews with our prisoners, describing how hopeless the battle is growing and how glad the prisoners are to get out of it. When I was covering the German army in the first part of war, I had occasion to observe how the Nazi propagandists made up these stories from prisoners out of whole cloth. Don't think only the Nazis are carrying on a propaganda war in connection with our invasion. We, too, are conducting a full-scale one by radio, pamphlet, and other means. Later in the day, I hope to be able to give you a report on that. In the meantime, a word about how the land looks where our troops are now fighting. I take my vacations along this strip of coastline between Cherbourg and Le Havre. And once I told the landing in these parts of Admiral Byrd after his flight across the Atlantic back in the 20s. Unable to land at Le Bourget outside of Paris, as had Lindbergh, Byrd looked for a beach to land on and found it on one of the beaches where our boys landed yesterday, just north of Cannes. As a matter of fact, the beaches on this coast of Normandy are the most famous in France. Deauville and Touville, a little to the east of where our troops landed, will be remembered by all Americans who visited France after the last war. They were the leading beach resorts on the Normandy coast. The tides in this region are heavy, and as the water just off the beaches is rather shallow, they go out a long way, adding to the difficulty of landing. No wonder, then, that a report from Allied headquarters a few minutes ago spoke of worsening weather, which made the surf run so high along the beaches that even unopposed landings were difficult. The shallow water just offshore and the stiff winds and choppy seas that prevail most of the time made a difficult surf. But since we knew that, our commanders undoubtedly took this difficulty under consideration in their plans. On the whole, though, this Normandy shoreline is the most hospitable, the easiest to land on, of any on the northern coast of France. It's a mystery that the Germans left it relatively undefended. They did so, apparently, because they expected our main blow further northeast in the Pas-de-Calais area, and also because they concentrated on fortifying the big port. By landing where we did, we are obviously trying to take two of these ports, Cherbourg and Le Havre, which are the two best in northern France, from the land side, and not by direct frontal attack from the sea, as the Germans expected. Around Caen, where our forces seem to be concentrating, land is low, and our small craft can go up two or three rivers several miles inland. But on both sides of Caen, the hills become quite high, several hundred feet northwest of Caen, where the French call them the Little Alps. In these hills, we will have more trouble. German defense will be easier. One other feature of the French countryside, it is crisscrossed with excellent roads. But unlike in Italy, the terrain here will be much easier for us. There are hills, to be sure, but there are no mountains to hold us up.
That was William L. Scharer discussing the pattern of German propaganda and also telling us something about the land on which our soldiers are fighting. Now for the report of Joe McCaffrey, we take you to U.S. Army headquarters at the Pentagon Building in Washington.
Our invasion troops are now cutting out the groundwork for a future drive with hard, blood-red fighting. An informed War Department military observer today said that the task which our forces are now engaged upon is that of expanding locally. Once this has been done on a large and substantial scale, and only after this has been done, can a long-range assault drive be planned. The Allies will have to advance many, many more miles before the picture will become clearer. This officer, a brigadier general, told reporters that all in all, our initial landings, after much detailed plotting, went well. There was a successful junction between our airborne troops and the forces that landed amphibiously. At present, we have a deep beachhead, and although he pointed out that everything is going to plan, the use of that phrase does not signify that the fighting hasn't been stiff and bloody. It is to be assumed that a great deal depends upon the overall European situation. Just what actions the Russians take in the immediate future may have a great bearing on the front upon which our forces are now engaged. Germany cannot be expected to give up an inch of ground in this invasion without a fight. It is doubtful if they will, at least at this stage, try to withdraw to what might be a more strategic position. The German command realizes that this is a fight to the finish, and the only ground they will concede is that which they are forced to concede by our fighting strength. The general warns that the American people should not expect a sudden and complete rout of the German army. He went on to say that the German forces, as we know of them, are in strong numbers, which necessitates the action being confined to straight, slugging maneuvers. No great hopes should be placed in the thought that the German army will crack quickly, and then we should not allow our early successes to, as he called it, set us up. And by the same token, we should not despair because of setbacks. He emphasized that you can't schedule a war as a railroad company schedules its trains. 1 mile, 10 miles and more inland for our troops still means that Germany has plenty of territory upon which to fight, still plenty of supply lines behind her troops. The military effort stated that the heavy, long-range bombing of France and Germany would continue in order to hamper the supply lines being used by the German troops. For supply lines are the veins and the arteries of an army. To kill the army, these lines must be severed. The overall picture that we gathered after questioning this expert is that there is a long road ahead before we can begin with clear, solid reasoning to talk of victory. I return you now to CBS in New York.
That was Joe McCaffrey reporting from United States Army headquarters in the Pentagon Building in Washington, D.C. The next regularly scheduled quarter-hour news roundup from CBS World News will come to you at 3:30 with Bob Trout reporting. We hope at that time, too, to bring you a report from London. However, regular programs will be interrupted to bring you any important news as soon as it is received. Harry Marvel reporting for CBS World News. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.